I want to get you tonight to turn to the book of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel, right at the end of the period of the Judges, we encounter a woman who struggled with some very difficult circumstances in her life. We know her name is Hannah. She is the first wife of a man by the name of Elkanah, who is a Levite, according to 1 Chronicles chapter 6, beginning in verse 33, a Levite from the hill country of Ephraim. And in her story that we're going to look at tonight, we find what one writer calls a harp note of the immortal triumph of patience. She stands out to us as a beautiful example of how the most unpleasant and difficult circumstances can produce a character that blesses the world. Not only that, in her response to the circumstances that she encounters, we see a woman that we might describe as being of a gentle and quiet spirit. Somebody that the Apostle Peter, when he talks about those two traits, would later say over in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4, that it is an imperishable quality which is precious in the sight of God. As I said, her name is Hannah. And the name is a name that means either grace or gracious. And I think that grace plays out in two ways. Number one, you see the grace of God made evident in her life. Number two, you see a graciousness on her part toward certain individuals around her, though she could have responded in such a different way. Tonight, as we look at her story, as we examine these things that are presented to us about her life, I would like for us to see in this faithful woman and the things that she encounters and she endures, and she, she exits from in a very victorious way. I want us to see some lessons, because there are some powerful lessons in the things that we're going to see here tonight that I believe God has placed there for us to learn. So let's start by looking at some of the things that we find about her. And first of all, it is what we might call her sorrow. And her sorrow begins all the way in the beginning of chapter 1 as we're told about her family. You see, one of the things that we're told is that Elkanah has a second wife. Hannah is not his only wife. He has another wife. Her name is Peninnah. And there are two important things that stand out in the relationship that exists within this family. The first of those things is that Peninnah, as I said, is his second wife. But secondly, it is the fact that Peninnah has sons and daughters, but Hannah is barren. She has no children. And in that day and time, that was not something that women looked forward to. She had a house, but she didn't have a home. And what I mean by that is, like women who had preceded her, whether you go back and you look at Sarah or later at Rebecca, you just work your way down the line, you find that in the history of God's people, she longed for children. She wanted a family. She wanted to be able to provide a son for her husband. And in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, we find there that children were seen as a sign of God's blessing, and not to have children was believed to be a curse from God. As a matter of fact, if you read through this story, we find down in verse 6 of this first chapter that God has closed her womb. And that is a lesson in and of itself, to ask yourself, why did God close the womb of such a beautiful woman? And I'm not talking about physical beauty, because her physical characteristics are never given to us, but beautiful on the inside, that gentle and quiet spirit. And I have my own thoughts on that, but that's not for tonight. You see, what is going on is that every year, Elkanah and Peninnah and her children and Hannah will go make the 20-mile trip to the place known as Shiloh, where the tabernacle of the Lord has been erected. There, Eli, as priest, serves, and his two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, which we will later find out are not such good men, are serving the Lord. And every year, he will do the same thing he's done every year prior to that. He will go to offer his sacrifices and pay his vows and worship the Lord. And every year, as the sacrifices are being offered and the portions are brought out to him from the priest that he is to eat upon there by the tabernacle, he will give the portions to Peninnah and to each of her children, but then he will also give a double portion to Hannah because he loved Hannah. And all it does is make matters worse. Because you see, it just increases Peninnah's jealousy of his second, of his other wife, Hannah. And it will cause her to irritate Hannah all the more. And it happens again year after year. They go down to the house of the Lord. They go through all of the things that they do in the worship of God, in the sacrifices that they give. Peninnah each year would provoke Hannah because of her jealousy of the things that are going on, to the point of tears, and Hannah would end up not eating. And then as a result of that and all of this, Hannah maintains a spirit that never lashes out toward Peninnah. She never acts in what we might call an unwomanly way. She never acts in a way to retaliate toward Peninnah. Her conduct is always exemplary. She shows herself to be the woman that she should be, a godly woman. And Elkanah does his best to encourage her. As a matter of fact, at one point he says, "Why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Verse 8. And the answer to that is yes. But no matter how much I love you, and no matter how well you treat me, I still want children. I want to be able to provide you with children. On a particular occasion, after Elkanah has tried to comfort Hannah, she does eat and drink some. But then she gets up and she goes over somewhere near where Eli is sitting in the front of the tabernacle in order to pray. And while she is there praying, even though God has closed her womb, she has not closed her heart toward him. And while she is praying, we're told that she is greatly distressed because of her situation. Literally, the text says there, if you look at the original language, it says that she is bitter of soul. Now, ladies, I can't begin to imagine what it is like for a woman who longs for children not to be able to have children. I mean, my wife and I have talked about it some because we were never able to have children of our own physically, that is. The children we have adopted are our own in every way. But I know it still was something that hurt. And so what Hannah does, and she goes, and because of the bitterness of her soul, she pours out her soul before the Lord, verse 15, and she does so with bitter tears. She's hurting deep inside. And she makes a promise to God. Her promise is this. She says, "O Lord of hosts," verse 11, "if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come upon his head." You see that? We might say she's bargaining with God, but she's just asking God, "Please, if you'll do this, then I promise. If you will look upon me, if you will remember me, if you will not forget me, if you will give me a son, then he's yours. I'll give him to you all the days of his life." She's committing him to the Nazarite vow. Remember the story of Samson and how he was to be a Nazarite all of his life? She's making the same promise to God with this man. But we're going to see a total difference between Samson and what the child that will be born to Hannah. But I'm getting ahead of myself. She prays, but as she pours out her heart to God, she doesn't speak words audibly where anyone can hear. She's speaking from the heart. Her lips are moving, but there's no sound. And as Eli the priest is watching her lips move, he mistakenly concludes she's drunk. She's drunk. She's here at the temple praying to God, and she is drunk. And so he reprimands her. He says to her, as you see in verse 14, "How long will you make yourself drunk? Put away your wine from you." You see, if it's not enough that her husband's other wife constantly berates her over the fact that she can't have children, and why would a man love a woman who can't bear him children? I don't know what all was said, but there was something that just grated at her. Here is the priest himself calling her a drunkard as she's praying to God and pouring out her heart. And she protests. She protests her innocence. And she says, if you'll notice in verse 15, "No, my Lord, I am a woman oppressed in spirit. I've drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant as a worthless woman, for I have spoken until now of my great concern and provocation." In all of this, there is no lashing out. There is no attack on another individual. She is just simply stating her case and begging to be understood. And he quickly realizes that he has assessed the situation wrongly, and that out of anguish, Hannah has been praying. And so he encourages her. He says to her, if you'll notice here in verse 17, "Go in peace. May the God of Israel grant you your petition that you have asked of him." Suddenly everything changed. Hannah's spirit was encouraged. It was lifted. Because as you notice here, we find that she gets up, she eats, and she drinks. And she even says to the priest, she says to Eli, "Let your maidservant find favor in your sight." And then the statement that is made at the end of verse 18 is that her face was no longer sad. She knows that her petition has been heard. She knows that now Eli, who is the priest of Israel, has spoken on her behalf. She believes that God will answer her prayers. And so we go from her sorrow to suddenly and her supplication, where she's pleading with God for an answer to all of this, for a response. We go to her sacrifice. You see, there's a beautiful part to the story, because what we're told is the next morning, Elkanah and Hannah and Peninnah and all of the children get up and they worship one last time before they start back home. When they get home, Elkanah has relations with Hannah, and guess what? Before long, she realizes, "I'm pregnant. I'm going to have a baby." And can you imagine the joy that she must have felt the moment she realized that she was expecting? Maybe there was that careful, I hope nothing happens to this pregnancy. I hope everything is good. And not only that, add to that the jubilation of giving birth to your firstborn son and being able to present that son to your husband, because that son is an answer to prayers that you've been praying for who knows how long. I can't imagine what she must have felt. Only a woman who's been through that can understand what is going on in her heart at that point in time. But she names him Samuel, a name that is very important because it means asked of God. He was truly an answer to prayers. And it isn't long after that that Elkanah, it's the year to go up, the time of the year to go up to the temple or the tabernacle again to offer the sacrifices and pay the vow. And so Elkanah gets ready to leave, and he and Peninnah and all of the children are going up. But Hannah says, "I'm not going with you this year. I'm going to stay behind." And what she says to her son is, "I will not go up until the child is weaned. Then I will bring him that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever." She had made her vow. She had promised God. And she's telling her husband, "I'm going to see it through." But we can see by something that Elkanah says that there's a little bit of doubt. Maybe some concern. about her following through on her promise, because she's waited a long time for this sign, and there's no indication that she'll ever have any other children. And what he says to her in verse 23 is, do what seems best to you. Remain until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord confirm his word. In other words, don't not follow through with what you need to do, what you promised. I imagine those early years were precious to her. I imagine she cherished every single moment knowing that she was soon to give up this son. So if she had had a cell phone in those days, she'd taken every picture she could have. She'd say, take a picture of me with Samuel. Here, get this picture of us doing this together. She would have wanted everything that she could to remember him by. No doubt, she picked up his clothes every time before washing them and would take in his smell and remember all of those things, bury them away in her mind, wanting to cling to every single last moment that she had with her son. But after she had weaned him, probably around the age of 3, she does what she promised she'd do. She and Elkanah take a 3-year-old bull. They take all of the other necessary items for sacrifice, and they head out to Shiloh. And when they get there, they slaughter the bull, and she brings her son to Eli. And folks, I believe that she spoke some of the most difficult words that she would ever speak in her life. Because here's what she says to the priest. Oh, my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. For this boy, I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition which I asked of him. So I've also dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord. With those words and probably a final hug, she and Elkanah returned home to Ramah. But Eli stayed behind to serve the Lord with Eli. I said, Samuel stayed behind to serve the Lord with Eli there in the temple of the Lord in Shiloh. Don't you know that the next year was special? Because the next year she had made him a little cloak, a little robe. And when they went up to offer their yearly sacrifices, guess what she did? She took that little robe and she gave it to her son. And the year after that, she did the same. And the year after that, she did it again. And I'm sure every year that she went back, it was a reunion of sorts. And she probably talked with him. And at some point, maybe it was the first year, maybe it was the second, but at some point, Eli blessed Elkanah and Hannah, and he said to them, may the Lord give you children from this woman in place of the one that she has dedicated to the Lord. She didn't know that would ever happen. She had made a promise to God, if you will give me a son, he will be dedicated to you. She never expected that God would give her any more children than the one son she'd asked for. But with Eli's blessing and prayer, God blessed her. As a matter of fact, the result was that God gave to Hannah 3 more sons and 2 daughters. What a blessing. Beautiful story, isn't it? And when you read the song of Hannah in chapter 2, it just stands out in some of the most beautiful ways. And you need to just take that time and read it and absorb the things that she's saying. What is it that we are to take away from this as we look at it all these years separated from that point in time? I think there's some valuable lessons for us tonight, and I want to share those with you in the few moments that we have left. One of those is this. Folks, the character of our children is profoundly affected by their mothers. I've said this over and over again, whether it's in a Bible class or whether it's in the form of a sermon. And we've often heard the saying, and I've used this one in this auditorium before, that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. But when you look at this situation, there is no doubt that in the early years of Samuel's life, Hannah's godly character left its mark upon this young man. Because we know that Eli's sons did not prove to be such good men. So somewhere there was a difference. Somewhere something happened in the life of this young man that stood out and would mark him for life as being a godly, faithful follower of God who would not compromise his values or compromise the truth, but would stand firm. And each year when she returned to Shiloh with the family, there is no doubt she must have encouraged him to keep being faithful to the Lord, keep serving him. So there is something that Hannah did that apparently Samson's mother did not do, or maybe the spirits of the two young men was just different. But I believe that there was a great deal of influence from this woman into the life of this young man, so that he proved to be a faithful judge and prophet of God's people. Secondly is this, and we see this on the basis of Peninnah's harsh treatment of Hannah. But folks, thoughtless, unloving words can bring great sorrow into the lives of those around us. The old phrase, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So untrue. Because every one of us who have ever been on the receiving end of hurtful words know how bad those words hurt and how harmful they are to us, how they destroy spirits, how they discourage individuals. Peninnah's harsh treatment of Hannah is evidence of that. It's why it is so important that we in our own lives are careful to guard our tongues and think about what we say to those around us. Sometimes there are things that we say in the passing of a moment, in the blinking of an eye, and we wish that we could take them back. Oh, I wish I'd never said that. But the damage is already done. It's why James would write over in James chapter 3 in verse 9 and 10 these words. He's talking about the destructive power of the tongue, and he adds this. He says, with it, that is with our tongues, we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. So we need to be careful with our tongues. We need to be careful with what we say to those around us. The third thing I would take from this tonight is this, and that is that the heart of God is a comforting retreat for the sorrowful soul. There are times when it seems that there's no one we can go to that can truly understand our heartache and our sorrows and our struggles as much as the one who created us. And it's in those times that, like Hannah, perhaps what we need to do is pour out our soul. There's a song that speaks about pouring out our soul deep within us. And we ask God to draw us closer to Him. And the reason that is so important is because God is the one who knows us, and God is the one, the God of all comfort, who is able to comfort us with in any of our afflictions with the comfort with which we provide for one another. We see that in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. But I'm reminded of what we see here, what David wrote so long ago in Psalm 55, verse 22. He said, cast your burden upon the Lord and He will sustain you. He will never allow the righteous to be shaken. God is the one who sustains us. Or maybe the words of Peter come to your mind, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. The New International Translation of this says, cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. Have you done that lately? Have you gone to God in prayer? Is there something that's just weighing your heart down? If it is, I encourage you to go to Him, because He hears you. He will not turn you away. He will not cast you aside. He will not criticize you. He will hear you. He will listen, and He will respond. The last lesson that I think we take from this is something that we see in Eli himself. We must never be too hasty in our judgments. You see, Eli misjudged Hannah. He saw a woman praying. He didn't hear words coming from her. He just saw her lips moving, and he assumed this woman is drunk. This woman has been too long around the wine. And sometimes we, like Eli, make hasty judgments. We too often wrong others by misinterpreting their motives. Well, you did this because of this. Well, that may or may not be true. We don't really know until we ask them for sure to determine what the true motive is. But to go ahead and judge the motive without finding out whether that is the truth is a mistake upon our part, just as it was for Eli all those years ago. As the old saying goes, appearances can be deceiving. And so we need to be careful about our assumptions. We need to ask. We need to allow room for understanding. And we need to do everything we can to make sure that relationships are not broken because we automatically make a misstatement or a misjudgment based upon what somebody has done or said, thinking you mean this when actually they meant something totally different. So tonight I leave you with those things. As I said, Hannah is a beautiful story with powerful lessons for each one of us in our lives as we live them out each day. But the question for all of us is, what will we learn from this? Here was a woman that was put through incredible hardship. She was criticized by one that should have encouraged her. She was misunderstood, and yet in all of that, she maintained her presence of mind, her devotion to her God, her trust in Him, her gracious spirit. What a woman she was. And ladies, if you can pass that on to your children, what a successful mother you will be, or grandmother. Tonight, maybe you're not a child of God. Maybe you have never yet come to Him in obedient faith. I want you to know there is a God who loves you, a God who gave His life for you, a God who wants you to be His eternally. And the only thing that is keeping you from that is you. It's you. It's not anybody else in this auditorium. It's you. So tonight, why not tonight? Why not say tonight, I'm going to give my life to Him. I want to be buried with Him in baptism. I want to live for Him. I want to live the rest of my life for Him. I want to go home to be with Him. Tonight, will you confess Him as Lord and Savior? Will you repent of your sin? Will you be buried with Him in baptism? And maybe you're a child of God here tonight and you know my life has just not been lived the way it should. You're among friends, people who love you and care for you. If we need to pray with you, for you, if we need to encourage you, let us know. That's what we're here to do. We want to, as a part of the family of God. If you need to respond to our Lord's invitation, won't you come right now as together we stand and sing.